Hey everyone, and welcome to Rhys Rambles, my weekly wrap-up of all the comings and goings in the worlds of retro computing and retro tech that have caught my eye over the past week. How are you all doing? I hope you're doing well, and welcome to another weekend. And quite an interesting development I just want to cover first, because I had a quite late-breaking story just at the end of last week's ramble, and I didn't really have time to look into it properly. And this is to do with the Stop Gilling Games petition that was started by, well, I say petition, it's a series of petitions for various governments all over the world, which was started by Ross Scott of Accursed Farms, of course. Fantastic YouTube channel. And this is something that I've covered quite a few times in previous rambles because, I must admit, at first I wasn't familiar with his work and I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. But it sounded like a good thing, so I thought I would start to spread awareness. And actually, the more I dig into it and the more I learn about it, yeah, it is a good thing. And this is to do with basically forcing game developers to actually continue to support their games after release. This was all kind of kicked off by a game called The Crew, which was released by Ubisoft quite a while back. I think it was 9 years ago now. And basically, they pulled the plug on the online servers with zero notice and left a load of people who were still playing the game out in the cold. And they were actually still selling the game right up until, you know, a couple of months before they pulled the plug. So there are actually people out there who'd bought it, played it for a couple of months, and all of a sudden couldn't play it. And basically the whole idea of this movement, I'm sure I don't need to explain it to you because I'm sure you're very familiar with it, but the whole idea of this whole movement is to basically get these developers to, you know, they don't have to support these games forever. I don't think that's reasonable, and that's not really the goal of the project. But at least, you know, hand them over to the community once they've stopped making money out of the thing, and, you know, make it possible for people to still play these old games, because otherwise they're just going to be lost forever. And I'm sure that's something that kind of strikes a chord with a lot of people who are into this retro stuff like I am. So, yes, right at the end of last week's ramble, obviously I talked a bit about this petition, which had been set up by the Stop Gilling Games movement. There are various petitions for different governments around the world, and this is the UK one, which of course is of particular interest to me. And because I'd signed it, I had an update come through basically saying that there had been a response from the British government. And going through this, the current status of this is that it has 19,684 signatures. And the way that these things work is basically when they hit 10,000 signatures, the government has to provide a response. And when they hit 100,000 signatures, it actually gets debated in Parliament for some value of debated, whether that's somebody bringing it up and the government saying, no, we don't care about that because all we care about at the minute is people in little boats for some reason. But anyway, I took a very quick glance at this, and you can actually follow the link and read it yourself. Of course, I'll put all the links down in the description for all the stuff that I cover. And I'd very quickly skimmed it, and I thought, well, it actually looks like quite a good response. It talks about sort of consumer rights and how it kind of hints that some of these game publishers might be in violation of those consumer rights, and that, you know, it's not really an answer saying, yes, we're going to do something about this, but it does talk about, you know, trading standards and, like it says here, the Competition and Markets Authority and all of that stuff. I mean, you can go and read it yourself if you want. But Ross has put together quite a good breakdown of this. Now, obviously, Ross isn't British, but he is apparently working with someone who knows a bit more about British consumer rights and consumer rights law and that kind of stuff. And he's kind of come to kind of a similar conclusion to me. One particular paragraph that he's talked about, and he's done this excellent video. It's 16 minutes long, and of course I will link to this so you can have a look. And it basically breaks the whole thing down paragraph by paragraph and just talks about how how these publishers have been in violation of these rights, how things might change in future, how a lot of this response is kind of a bit of a non-answer, but there's actually a very interesting paragraph in there that we could use as leverage against these publishers to actually get them to support their stuff, or at least advertise what the expiry date of a game would be. And one thing that he talks about in here is that, obviously, the one that kind of set all of this thing off, The Crew, when Ubisoft actually released the game, this game actually has officially licensed vehicles, real-life vehicles from real-life vehicle manufacturers, and they only had what seems like a 10-year license on the rights to use those in the game. So they knew full well when they released it that they'd have to stop supporting it in 10 years' time, because that's how long the license ran for. And, of course, they didn't advertise what that expiry date would be. And a big part of what Ross is getting on here in this video is that, you know, they could have put that on the front of the box. Of course, that's going to be something that's going to have to come from the very top, from the actual government level, because game publishers aren't going to willingly say, "Oh, well, actually, we can only support this game for 2 years." But yeah, obviously, like phone manufacturers, and they do with software updates. They obviously say this will get updates for X amount of years, and operating systems. You know, Microsoft will say we'll be supporting Windows 10 until this date or whatever. So it doesn't seem, you know, it's not unprecedented. And there was quite an interesting comment that I read. I was going through the comments, and there's some actually really, really good, well-informed comments here on this video. Well worth a read. And one in particular I came across from Cheetah00. And it says, "Hey Ross, it might be worth pinning this as relevant. The UK government has started mandating that digital products, in this case IoT, such as smart home products, surveillance cameras, etc., need to have a term of expiry, a best before date. I think this is absolutely relevant here because the reasons for this are very similar." And yes, absolutely, we do have this new legislation in the UK that if you're selling IoT devices and it's linked to a cloud service and that cloud service is going to stop being supported at some date in the future, you have to make buyers of that device aware of that, because of course at that point the device becomes completely useless. And it's exactly the same as what's going on with these online games and indeed single player games that have an online component. So yeah, that's actually kind of some leverage and could potentially lead to something happening. So you never know. Just a bit of a development, but if you've been interested in this and how this is kind of progressing, it is an excellent video that just kind of goes over all of the points and digs into it a bit. And I found the whole thing very interesting, as you might expect. He's also announced in here that there is now the Australian petition. I think that the time left to sign that is quite limited. So if you are in Australia and you want to go and sign that, you need to go and get your skates on and go and do that. And there's now a Canadian petition and some movement happening in Brazil as well that looks quite promising. Yeah, obviously it covers all of that in the video and I don't want to kind of retread all of that. But well worth checking out and quite an interesting update. And because obviously I covered it at the end of last week's ramble, I thought I would just do a bit more of an in-depth update here now we've had a bit of time to digest it. So the Nintendo Switch 2, and I must admit, I'm a big fan of the Switch. I think it's a good console, and it does have that retro connection because, of course, you can go on there and play all of those lovely old N64 games and things on there. I think it's an interesting device. I do think it's an interesting device, as always, from Nintendo, as you would expect. And, of course, the Switch 2 rumours, which have just been persistent. Literally, I don't think a day goes by when you don't see someone on the internet claiming that they've got access to some exclusive leak and they know about the Switch 2, and it's always just clickbait. And I don't even look at them anymore. I don't care. You know, I'm only interested in official announcements. And there has been something of an official announcement this week from Nintendo, which is quite interesting. So I'll just very quickly cover this. It's a tweet. That's literally all they've given us. And it says, "This is Furukawa, president of Nintendo. We will make an announcement about the successor to Nintendo Switch within this fiscal year. It will have been over 9 years since we announced the existence of Nintendo Switch back in March 2015. Can you believe that? We'll be holding a Nintendo Direct this June regarding the Nintendo Switch software lineup for the latter half of 2024. But please be aware that there will be no mention of the Nintendo Switch successor during that presentation." And all these rumours and leaks and things, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's going to have 4K and it's going to have these..." I mean, there's this quite famous one, this render that someone did. I can't even find the original of this because it's just everywhere, all over the internet. Anytime anyone mentions anything to do with the Switch 2, it's this one with these weird modular controller things. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's completely unofficial, but for some reason, whenever anyone covers this story, this is the image that they go with. Just a bit of a pet peeve of mine. But yeah, so the announcement, which is a bit of a non-announcement, is that basically... there's going to be a Nintendo Direct in June, as there are quite regularly. They're not going to be talking about the Switch 2, but they will be talking about some upcoming Switch stuff. But something will be announced by the end of the fiscal year, which of course is March 2025. And that will be 10 years since the original Switch, which is a fantastic lifespan for any console. So interested to see that. I'm not usually in the business of covering Nintendo stuff or covering rumours or any of that kind of thing. But I must admit, I find it quite an interesting console personally. So I thought I would just talk about that little tidbit. And when I was searching for this story so I could show it to you in this ramble, for those of you watching on YouTube, and of course this is also available on all of the podcast platforms, just as a reminder, I noticed that there's some people talking about leaks again, but like I say, it happens every day, not even worth looking at them anymore, because people just making stuff up. Why do you think someone would do that, just go on the internet and tell lies. Terrible. Wow, we're rattling through these this week, aren't we? You can tell that I'm about to go on holiday first thing tomorrow morning. And on that note, there probably won't be a ramble next week. I haven't quite decided. I'm not going to have time to record two of them this week, I'm afraid. But maybe I'll record something when I'm away, or maybe I'll just miss a week for the first time in 18 months. I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, onwards and upwards. And of course, the next story is about my favourite, or one of my favourite games, certainly my favourite remaster of the past year, I guess. And that, of course, is Dark Forces, a game that I have a lot of history with. That fantastic LucasArts Star Wars themed first person shooter, of course, from the 90s. And I love this game. I played the remaster through. It wasn't without its issues, and I did mention those at the time when I covered that in these rambles. Stuff to do with the music. The music was kind of the main thing. So I did a live stream of this game, of the original version of this game, on my 486, hooked up to some MIDI devices. And this was in the early days of my channel. Basically, I wanted to get into the YouTube partner program, and I wanted to get up to the 4,000 watch hours that you need to be able to apply for that. And one of the things that you can do to get those hours is to live stream. So that's what I did. And this was like in the deepest, darkest days of lockdown as well. So a bit of a captive audience, a good time to do it. And yeah, the Roland Sound Canvas support in Dark Forces is excellent. The soundtrack sounds absolutely fantastic through that device. And of course, the game, the original game, had this quite novel and unique iMuse system, where the music would basically adapt to what was happening, the actual action that was happening on the screen. Bit quieter, no enemies around, it's a bit kind of backgroundy. And then you'd open the door and there'd be a big room full of enemies, and all of a sudden this big orchestral score would, you know, ramp up, and much like the movies, you know. And it worked. It was very, very effective. And one thing that one of the reviewers, I think it was Digital Foundry, picked up on, and that I certainly noticed as well, and I kind of wish that they hadn't sort of primed me to notice that, because it was something that kind of stuck with me a little bit as I was playing through the game, was that basically they'd had some issues trying to sort of re-implement this system in the remaster. They changed some internal timing in the actual game engine itself, and it kind of messed up the iMuse system. And they did say, to be fair, to Night Dives credit, when they first released this, they did say that it's something that they would look into. And the news is that they have now released a patch. And that was a very convoluted way of getting around to announcing that, wasn't it? But yep, if you bought this game on Steam, it should be updating. It should have updated this week. May the 7th, 2024, and yeah, Dark Forces Remaster Patch 1.0.4. And it's not just the music that they've fixed, and I must admit, I haven't tested this, and I haven't seen any reviews of it, so I'm not quite sure how successful they've been in addressing this, but to be honest, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, because they've always been excellent in the past. But yeah, second thing on the list, improve music playback timing. Some stuff to do with randomization of scripted music events, music panning, random note dropouts, which, to be fair, I think was actually a thing on in the original game. The ice physics. Yeah, the ice level was a particular pain in the bum because of the ice physics. But again, it was something that was a little bit janky in the original game, if my memory serves me correctly. Switches not working. I thought this was quite an interesting point, because I don't really recall any of these, but there's quite a lot of switches in this game that you don't necessarily know are switches because of the textures that they've used and stuff. It's not a very sort of user-friendly game. But apparently there were some switches in the game that didn't work, and they have fixed those. Some stuff to do with GPU rendering and culling of 3D models and all of that. Performance fixes on the Switch. I guess I don't need to go through every single point because it's up here on screen, and I will, of course, link to this so you can have a little read of it. There's one thing that I actually found quite tricky in this game that I hadn't even registered, and that was to do with the weapon wheel. So obviously, back in the day, you'd press the corresponding number button to switch to whichever weapon you wanted to use. But in this remaster, of course, you can play it with a controller, which is actually how I played it, sitting on the sofa in front of my Media Center PC. And yeah, you hold down one of the shoulder buttons, I think, on the Xbox controller, and it brings up a weapon wheel on the screen, and then you can use the thumbstick to pick which weapon you want. And one thing that kind of bugged me, but I hadn't really registered it sort of consciously in my mind, was that the weapons actually move around. They're not always in the same place in the weapon wheel. As you work your way through the game and you collect more of them, they kind of move around. And it kind of spoils that very reflexive, you know, quick way of switching between weapons, just which should be kind of a subconscious thing that should only take a fraction of a second when you're in the heat of battle. And apparently that's another really big thing. It is buried at the bottom of the patch notes, but I think that's going to be quite a big thing for you know, for playability and for what's the word? Quality of life. So that should be good. A big improvement to the game. They've also tweaked some of the animations and stuff in the cutscenes and stuff like that. So really cool. Fixed collisions at high frame rates. I mean, obviously this game was originally designed to run under DOS at 70 hertz, and its internal clock was all kind of fully coded around that. And they didn't have access to the original source code when they did this remaster. So the fact that they've done what they've done is pretty incredible. And the fact that they've gone in and gone back to it and fixed some of the outstanding issues, it's just above and beyond. Very pleased with this. So is it an excuse for another playthrough? Probably not immediately. It's still quite fresh in my mind. But yeah, maybe when the winter months. And I know that it seems like quite a long way away now. We've finally got some decent weather. But yeah, when the winter months start to draw in, I might sit down and revisit this and just have a playthrough again, because I do love this game. I did say I'd live stream it, didn't I? So maybe I can do that. But yeah, good to see Night Dive supporting Dark Forces. An excellent game. If you haven't played it yet, I can highly recommend it. If you're into your sort of retro boomer shooters and that kind of thing, yeah, give it a try, because it's a great game. And you don't need to be a Star Wars fan. I'm not a Star Wars fan, and I still love it. So the time is upon us for me to talk about my favourite subject for these rambles, and that subject is myself, I know. Obviously I didn't really have much to report last week because I'd done the whole studio move around and rearrange and all that stuff. I'm now fully back up and running, but as I kind of alluded to a minute ago, I'm actually going to be away next week, so that's going to interrupt things. But at least I'm ready to hit the ground running when I get back. Don't want to wish my life away and wish my holiday away. And yeah, coming back here and recording stuff is going to be the last thing on my mind, I have to say, when I'm sunning myself on that lovely beach. Although I must admit, the holiday is in the UK and we have checked the weather forecast, and there's thunderstorm warnings on the Sunday. So yeah, that's going to be exciting. I do like a nice thunderstorm though. It's going to be good. But anyway, yes, the studio update. I do have a bit of a... I did sustain an injury this week building some shelving, and I'm going to warn you, there is some blood here if you are watching this on YouTube. So, should we have a countdown? Okay, look away in 3, 2, 1. Yeah, so I was assembling some shelving, and I was, it's the stuff that you kind of slot together and then you bang it together with a mallet, and I was doing it above my own head like an idiot, and the shelf that I was working on slipped and sliced a bit of a chunk out of my face. Let's put that away now. Let's take that image away. The image is gone. There's no more blood. And yeah, it's right in front of my ear, quite a deep gash. And it's apparently, it looks like it's going to leave a scar. I can't really see it in a mirror, and you probably can't see it on camera. It's the reason I'm looking quite beardy in this update as well, if you are watching on YouTube, because I can't shave because... you know, I've got this big scabby bit here, which is not very pleasant, is it? But not the greatest of subjects. So we'll move on to something else. And of course, that is releases for this week. And I did actually release a video this week, even though I wouldn't have thought that I would be able to. So the video that went out this week was on the main channel, and it was to do with Jag Jam, which I talked about in last week's ramble. And it's this Atari Jaguar game jam organised by Boris Kretzinger. And, you know, he's a publisher of retro computing and retro gaming magazines going back many years, a bit of an industry veteran and a big name in that world. Of course, a big fan of my channel and a fan of my rambles as well. So shout out to Boris and Songbird Productions, which is quite exciting. So part of this jam is that you can win a publishing contract with Songbird Productions for your homebrew game for the Jag, which is a very cool thing. And I thought, I'll do a main channel video on this, get it out to the widest possible audience, because, you know, I'm quite excited. I'm a judge, that's my connection to the thing, full disclosure. Absolutely no secret there, but, yeah, you know, it'd be cool to get the word out and get some more applicants. And this isn't the kind of video that you look at the stats on and worry about whether it's done well or not, but, yeah, it's... You can probably imagine it's kind of underperformed, and my previous video about the Doom stuff also underperformed. But actually, it's fine, because overall views on my channel are actually up, because there's still loads of people watching the desk videos and the my Xbox mod videos, and the 2600 cartridge numbering video that I did a while back. Oddly enough, YouTube keeps pushing that, and people keep watching it, so... hey, I'm now in a position where I can make videos on the kind of stuff that I want to make, which is cool. And yeah, this video has it's had a really positive reception, loads of great comments from people who very fondly remember the Jag, lots of Jag fans in the comments, which is great to see. And one thing that I thought was quite unusual with this one, if we just go back to the main list, is 100% like to dislike ratio. And I discussed this with a few other sort of small YouTubers in our particular niche, and they were very surprised that that this was an unusual thing for me. But yeah, well, I think once a channel gets to a certain size, you launch a video and within minutes it will get downvotes. And it's nothing personal. You know, it's YouTube bots trying to impersonate real behavior. It's the video being served up on autoplay and people telling YouTube, no, I'm not interested in this, which is perfectly fine. You know, you do it on Spotify and Netflix and stuff like that. But yeah, this one, you know, core audience, not a lot of views, 1,700, but 100% every single person who liked, who watched the video and felt strongly enough about it to express an opinion, liked it. And that's a good thing. So, you know, there's always a, every cloud has a silver lining and all that. But the important thing is, of course, just getting the word out there about Jag Jam. So if you haven't seen that video, if you're interested in getting involved with some Jaguar homebrew development, there are links. There is a link to the itch.io page, which has links to all the development tools and all that stuff. Obviously, all the rules and everything else, the deadline. Deadline's the end of October, so you've got a decent chunk of time to get something out there. And I'm just quite excited to get my hands on some people's submissions and see what I think. Play with some exciting new stuff for the Jaguar. But yeah, that's enough about me. I have recorded another video. There is an update to do with the PC9821 hard drive, which has come back from a good friend of mine who also has access to some data recovery stuff. So that's really exciting. And there is an update about that. And he also donated some other bits and bobs to the channel, which were quite interesting. So I also kind of unbox those and go over those in that video. And that will be going out on the second channel, on this channel at some point in the next week. So another whirlwind week for Nintendo fans this week. Yep, another Nintendo story, but this is right in my ballpark because this is Rare Prototypes and that's the kind of stuff that I get excited about. So yeah, a story over on timeextension.com, one of my favourite websites, as I always say every single week. Shout out to the Time Extension people. I'm just stalling for time while I try and alt-tab to the right tab. Right, here we go. So yeah, Rare SNES prototype auction cancelled after passing the $2 million mark. And the reason I say that it's been a bit of a whirlwind over the past week is because everyone's been had their eyes on this and it's been reported in various places. And yeah, it got up to $2 million, a $2 million bid with 4 days remaining. And all of a sudden, the whole thing was cancelled and just vanished off the internet. And nobody knows what's happened to it. Or, you know, perhaps the seller had an offer they couldn't refuse. Perhaps they got cold feet. You know, it got up to $2 million and they panicked. Or, you know, maybe they've decided they can sell it to a museum or something else. Who knows? But this is a Super Famicom, of course, which was what the SNES, the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, was known as in Japan originally. Of course, the follow-up to the massively successful Famicom, or the NES in the West, NES and SNES, as we call them in the UK. And yeah, this was listed for sale on Yahoo Auctions Japan, where else, where all the cool Japanese stuff gets listed. Bought a fair bit of stuff from there myself over the years. Not Rare $2 million prototypes, though. And it was believed to have been produced in 1989, according to the story. And there wasn't really all that much information on it, but it looks like it was quite a late prototype because it's very similar to the final design. It's got a red power switch, and I'm sure I saw a post somewhere, although I couldn't find it when I was sat down to record this, where someone was kind of looking at the shapes of the ports and things on the images and saying, oh, you know, they look slightly different to the eventual production version. But for all intents and purposes, quite a late prototype. It has a sticker on it, apparently. Where did I just read that? It has an expansion port on the front rather than on the bottom. Obviously, like the original Famicom had that expansion port on the front. And a 3.5mm headphone socket and volume dial on the side. So quite an interesting thing. But like I say, the kind of the shape of the shell was quite close to the final production version. And it says here, a Nintendo development sample sticker is still affixed, which would be a cool thing. It'd be a cool thing to have in your collection, wouldn't it? And Time Extension have posted some images here of some other known pre-production samples, and these are obviously much earlier ones because they're pretty wild and interesting looking shapes, some of these things. And of course, there was the famous PlayStation prototype that sold a while back. I think that went for, it says here, it went for 300 $360,000 back in 2020. And I think Ben Heck fixed it, didn't he? He had it on his YouTube channel, and he actually managed to get that one working, which was quite a cool video. I'll link that so you can have a look at it. I've not got it here, so you can have a look. So we can look at it now. But yeah, interesting story. Easy come, easy go. But $2 million, 4 days left, and the auction was cancelled. And that was it. And now it's time for Steve's Video of the Week. Steve's Video of the Week? Yeah, I mean, it's Steve's Tech Shed who keeps submitting all of these amazing videos to my Discord server. So yeah, yet again, it's another one that he's submitted. And this came off the back of a conversation that we were having and something that was a very new discovery to me. And I hadn't realised that he'd actually posted this video a year ago. So I'm well behind the curve on this one. But I was listening to a random podcast. It was the Try Guys podcast, if you're interested. Quite an amusing podcast. Good channel, Try Guys. I quite enjoy it, especially their cooking stuff and the challenges and things that they do. But that's by the by. But they happened to mention in this podcast something called dead internet theory. And this was a whole new concept to me. And I actually went digging and looking for some information on it because I thought the whole thing sounded fascinating. And you're probably aware of this. Like I say, I'm always the last to know about these things. But basically, the concept behind this, and there's a bit of a conspiracy aspect to it, and I don't subscribe to the conspiracy aspect to it, but I do think the technical side of it is very interesting, in that basically the majority of traffic on the internet now is generated by bots. You've got bots generating images and stuff using AI, and obviously that was much less of a thing when this kind of first came about a few years ago, this theory. But now you've got bots generating stuff on AI and they're posting it on Facebook and Instagram and whatever else. And then you've got tens of thousands of replies and interactions and things, which are also bots. And we're actually at the point now where these social media sites, which were built for humans to interact with each other, are predominantly just bot traffic. And the humans, at least the ones that kind of aren't smart enough to spot that, that's perhaps doing them a bit of a disservice. But yeah, you know, the humans are kind of largely unaware of the fact that this is going on. And it's like, what a crazy concept. But actually, when you think about it, it's kind of true and it's kind of sad. But yeah, obviously there's a video aspect to this because this is Video of the Week. And this is this video by Cold Fusion called The Internet is Fake, Dead Internet Theory. It's 13 and a half minutes long, and I watched this, and it basically sums the whole thing up. And it does talk a little bit about the conspiracy and about how... But basically, it's like, you know, these bots are run by the government to try to influence people. And of course, there's some political aspect of that that does go on. But actually, most of it's just to do with money. It's just commercial. It's social networks trying to bump up their interaction as much as possible so they can make fractions of a penny in ad revenue on all the fake stuff that's being posted. And it's just an endless cycle. But I thought the whole thing was absolutely fascinating. Obviously, I work in the world of web development and stuff, and I create content myself. So this was right up my flagpole. But yeah, quite a fascinating video, really. And since this was made 10 months ago, it's kind of, you know, have things tipped over to actually being the majority of stuff posted on the internet not being real people. I mean, perhaps those of us who are a bit more technical and a bit more on that side of things are oblivious to it. I mean, I don't use Facebook. I can't imagine many of my viewers and listeners use Facebook. But that seems to be kind of the main offender as far as this is concerned. So great video. I thought this was really interesting. I thought the whole theory behind it was really interesting. Like I say, not entirely subscribed to the conspiracy theory side of it, but it is very interesting to think about. And of course, people talking about Black Mirror and all of that, how it was all predicted. But yeah, cool video. I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you ever so much to Steve from Steve's Tech Shed yet again for another fascinating video. This guy seems to watch more YouTube than I do. So, thanks ever so much for watching. Apologies for showing you my horrible bloody injury. I promise I won't do it again. But yeah, like I mentioned earlier, it's holiday time. I'm going to go home. I've cleaned the entire house. I've cleaned the ducks out. We've got our three Indian runner ducks. There's actually a video about this on this channel somewhere if you want to go and have a look for that. But yeah, we've got three Indian runner ducks. Obviously, clean those out in preparation for us not being there next week. We have a lovely neighbour who looks after our animals for us while we're away. So that's all great. But yeah, obviously, vacuumed and cleaned the house and did a load of ironing and prepared a load of stuff just to try and make my wife's life just a little bit easier. Can't expect her to do everything for the to prepare for the holiday. I also bought a new car, which we'll be driving down in to the place that we're going. Don't want to give too much away because there's some strange people out there. But yeah, I'm sure I'll be talking about that at some point in the future as well. But thank you ever so much for listening and for joining me this week on Rhys Rambles. Again, this goes out on YouTube. It goes out on all of the podcast platforms. And I've got some new viewers slash listeners. So I just want to make people aware. This is my second channel, Rhys. And I do have a main channel called Control Alt Rhys, where I do kind of more higher effort, slightly different format of video on there. The studio is all back up and running now, so we're going to hit the ground running as soon as I get back and start getting some stuff out. And yeah, hope you have a wonderful weekend and look forward to that unboxing video and a bit more of an update on this PC9821 hard drive in a video that will be coming out on this channel in the next week. So thanks for listening, thanks for watching, and I shall see you next time.